Hello and respected viewers, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to the channel once more. And in this video, I'm talking about Russia military expansion and how that's bumping into their severe recruitment difficulties. On the 16th of September this year, the Kremlin said it was going to expand the Russian armed forces up to 2.4 million. Note that's the armed forces, not just the army, including the Navy and the Air Force. So this figure will be all but impossible to achieve. They probably lie about how big the armed forces are anyway, just like they lie about everything. Their statistics are always inflated. That would be an increase of almost 500,000 they're attempting to achieve. Now, how on earth are you going to achieve that when there's a falling population? Russia's got a population of around 140 million. They obviously lie and say it's a bit higher than it is. And even then, they're including the illegally annexed regions of Ukraine, four of them. So the Kremlin says that this increase is in response to heightened threats to Russia's security and territorial integrity. So the plan is to increase the number of soldiers because they're gaining ground in Ukraine, but not fast enough. And there's got to be some proportionality between the number of soldiers you lose, killed or wounded, and the amount of ground you lose. If you lose 100 soldiers to go for 100 meters, it's not worth it. If you lose 100 soldiers to go forward 10 kilometers, it is worth it. So they're thought to suffer several hundred casualties a day. There are often these stories from the pro-Ukrainian media saying it's over 1,000 casualties a day inflicted on Russia. I'm deeply skeptical of that. But anyway, of the casualties, only about 25% are deaths. And wounded, that varies enormously from the very trifling can carry on the same day to people who are quadruple amputees or whatever. So Russia has this numerical advantage and they're using it. I'm saying that we can throw more bodies into the fray than the Ukrainians can. They will run out of soldiers a lot sooner than we can. This is our advantage. Let's use it to the max. So Ukraine has also suffered serious losses too. Now, they're not so careless with the lives of their soldiers. Putin tends to fritter his soldiers away, to throw away their lives in diversionary attacks, attacks which have got no hope of succeeding, and so on. Send forward people in the meat attacks, just the cannon fodder, to identify the Ukrainian positions, to distract them, especially, you know, the prison recruits, people regarded as runts, who've got almost no training, very poor equipment, hardly fed, and then the professionals are well-equipped come in to finish the Ukrainians off. Okay, so send some of the disposable troops, they see it, to stop a few bullets. So Russia believes they can convince Kyiv to make peace on the grounds that Kyiv simply cannot sustain these losses. You know, if Russia's losing two soldiers to every one, then the Russia would definitely win. If Russia's losing three soldiers to every one the Ukrainians lose, Russia will win. If it's four soldiers to one every one the Ukrainians lose, in that case, Ukraine might win. So right at the beginning of the war, the very first day, Putin vowed live on TV that no draftee would ever be sent to Ukraine. Within weeks, it emerged that even on the very first day, some draftees had been sent to Ukraine against their will. So Russia's tried to do this as little as possible. But because they're running very low on soldiers this year, they're sending draftees there more and more. So these draftees, they have minimal basic training. They're poorly led, poorly motivated. And in August this year, when battle-hardened Ukrainian veterans performed the Kursk incursion, they came up against draftees, and the Russian draftees often surrendered immediately if they didn't hightail it out of there. So they're still very green. Anyway, September 2022, there was that general mobilization decree signed by Vladimir Vladimirovich, and this caused panic stations. I mean, over a million people emigrated, some of them still abroad, about 600,000 still abroad, some come back in the last 2 years. It wasn't simply men aged 18 to 40 who are supposed to be subject to this mobilization. In some cases, they took their wives, girlfriends, or children with them. They mostly went to former Soviet republics, such as Georgia, Armenia, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, queuing for days to get over the Georgian border, even on foot, because they wouldn't let people on foot in fewer than those in vehicles. And there were no flights between Georgia and Russia in those days. So because in these most of these former Soviet countries, they can go for 90 days without a visa, and the cost of living is low. nine of those former Soviet countries, and they can use their domestic passport. That's what we would call ID card. In Russia, you're required to carry it at all times. International passport is different, and some Russians don't have that. Those of Jewish stock often emigrated to Israel, even though they're only like a quarter Jewish. That's on the father's side, and they grew up in Orthodox Christianity. Often they can get citizenship quite easily. The very wealthy tended to go to the United Arab Emirates, where you can get permanent residency for a few hundred thousand dollars, or to Turkey, it was even cheaper than that. So anyway, the general mobilization ended, and there's still a clause that which has never been revealed, because there are numbered clauses, and one of them, we got the number, but no words. Why? The speculation is rife. Is that because it broadened who was subject to conscription? Did it include women or people who are otherwise exempt up till now, like police officers or intelligence officers or something like that? But anyway, a lot of people have come home who fled 2 years ago. Partly they've run out of cash and are unable to find work or certainly legal work abroad. But the sort of people who fled are those that Russia can least afford to lose, like IT specialists that were behind in IT. They're people who are wealthy and quite well educated who could easily find work overseas or work remotely, like accountants, cryptocurrency traders, the sort of people Russia needs to keep its economy thriving. Anyway, by the August of 2022, Russia started prison recruitment into Wagner, the private military company. And they're told if you volunteer, if you survive 6 months in Ukraine, not a likely prospect, you will have your freedom and your sentence will be rescinded. Now, Russia honored this promise of rescission of sentences after just 6 months in many cases. Other cases, it didn't. But this meant that some extremely dangerous people were free. And there have been a number of well-reported cases of men coming back after 6 months fighting in Ukraine, committing murder and so on. So it wasn't actually volunteering in some cases. These guys had the heating in their cells turned off when it was like minus 10, stuff like that. Tortured into signing these contracts and their lives often thrown away. But if they distinguished themselves, they could get into the Wagner Group proper, were actually treated as soldiers and properly paid. Anyway, the Wagner Group was shut down in June 2023 after that failed coup, and the men were made to sign contracts with the Russian army. So there are almost no potential prison recruits left. Prison population is down and down. Those worth recruiting have gone. So those left are in such a state of decrepitude, are so elderly, they just can't be used. They got psychiatric disorders. They're just impossible to control. And they will be a danger to other Russian soldiers. Bear in mind that Russia's got a very high per capita prison population. 10% of men spend some time in prison. Anyway, so the prison population has fallen drastically, partly because of the tens of thousands who joined Wagner Group. It's also because young men have left the country or been drafted or whatever, volunteered for the army. Is young males commit the majority of crime, and there are just fewer of those around, so there's not so much crime, so rather few people are sent to prison. The government's even going to have to shut down a few penal colonies and prisons because there's no point in keeping them open. What they could obviously do is actually to draft the guards from these defunct prisons. So Russia is striving to get more men to sign contracts with the army and offering them highly attractive salaries. One of the only good things about war is there is no unemployment, and in fact, there's a paucity of labor. You know, Russia thinks it's easily 1 million short of workers, and that's very acute in certain sectors. And that shortage of workers is getting worse. It's growing. And places like Tatarstan, people aged as young as 15 have left school illegally to work in factories, and the government doesn't care. So the laws on supply and demand means, you know, there's greater demand than supply, the wages are going to go up. So the armed forces are having to have higher and higher salaries to get people in because they can't compete with the civilian economy. The average salary in Russia is around $800 a month. Now, that varies enormously depending on which area of the economy you are in, like obviously high finance, and which region you're on. Moscow is far higher than the Far East. The minimum wage is only $200 a year, which is just unlivable. But nobody earns that because they can obviously command a higher salary. The army will pay $1,800 a month for a private, yeah? So see, that's like nine times the minimum wage. It's more than double what the average salary is. Obviously getting free food, accommodation, clothing and stuff like that. But soldiers often complain they're not paid the amount promised. And their families may receive thousands of dollars if the man is killed. But again, that's quite often not paid. So they're always cheated. So the recruitment bonus on the day you sign up, then $3,000 is typical. If you persuade someone else to sign up, if you bring a friend to sign up, you get $1,200. Anyway, in Moscow, the recruitment bonus is $22,000. It has to be very, very high because the salaries are so high. And if you volunteer in Moscow for the army, you get $60,000 per annum, which is reflective of just how difficult it is to get to Muscovites to join up. So Russia's really exacerbated its problems because since that Crocus City Hall terrorist attack earlier this year, over 100 people were killed. There's been a lot of bigotry against Tajiks, a spate of prejudice against Central Asians in general. There's been many raids by the police. They've been hassled, beaten up, deported. Thousands more refused to come into the refused entry to the Russian Federation. So these Central Asian countries, they are a crucial source of workers for Russia. People from Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, they often work in poorly paid sectors such as taxi driving, agriculture, sanitation, construction, and remittances for these are extremely important for the economies of these countries. Tajikistan being the most dependent on remittances in the world. But this abrupt and sharp reduction in the number of Tajiks coming into Russia has really hit the Tajik economy. It's the poorest former Soviet republic. Remember, these former Soviet republics have banned people from joining the Russian army on threat of prison. And some have gone home and actually been sent to prison, but only for like a few months of practice. So you come to, if you're one of these Central Asian laborers, you come to Russia on a one-year visa and you can renew it any number of times. But it takes 10 years to get citizenship, costs thousands of dollars, and most of them can never, ever afford that. But in visa centers in Russia, they're called aside and said, we'll speed up the process to get citizenship if you join our army. And some have done so. There were 10 million migrant workers in Russia before COVID. The 10 million workers out of a working population of 75 million. That is significant. But now there are only 6 million migrant workers. So Russia's made its situation a lot worse for itself. Migrant workers often the last to be hired, the first to be fired. Anyway, so now they want to go and work in China or the Gulf with the higher wages, even Kazakhstan, the richest country in Central Asia, where although the wages are lower than in Russia, there's less racism, cost of living is lower, the phenotype is the same, so they can't be told apart. And they can obviously travel there by bus and train, which is quite cheap as opposed to a pricey flight to Russia. So Russia's introduced a raft of all these new laws, banning migrant workers from working in certain areas, making them subject to all sorts of checks and massive fines, is grossly oppressive and unnecessary. It's just sheer racialism. But that's aggravating the shortfall of workers in certain sectors of the economy and in inhospitable regions. So Russia's managed to recruit a few thousand men from other countries outside the former Soviet Union, such as India, Nepal, Cuba. The Indians have been returned home after the appeal of Narendra Modi. But these men from outside the former USSR, that's under 1% of Russia's fighting force. They can easily recruit more from the poorest countries in the world. Their overall demographic problems. Russia is facing demographic disaster. At this rate, the Russians will be extinct in about 200 years. Their fertility rate was 1.5%. Now, that's similar to many Western countries, but Western countries can have a longer life expectancy and more immigration. The Ukraine war has made it worse with young men getting killed or leaving the country. It's only men that Russia's trying to recruit. There are women in the armed forces, but only about 4% of it, which is very low for an army these days. And a few women soldiers have been killed fighting in Ukraine. So in 2022, Russia started recruiting women who are in jail for non-combat roles in the so-called special military operation, communications, cooks, truck drivers, and so on. The government doesn't want to advertise that because they're so macho. So the idea is to recruit vulnerable groups. You're meant to do 1 year of military service between the age of 18 and 30. But in practice, if you're wealthy, you can avoid it. You bribe doctors to certify you're permanently medically unfit for military service. You go abroad, you delay it through study. But anyway, men who finish their military service can be recalled to the armed forces at any time. And the army started to do this in 2022. The men have become a refresher course because some of them completed their military service over 20 years earlier. And of course, weapon system has changed, military doctrine moved on. But sometimes they have a refresher course for only 3 days and they weren't physically fit either. So you can volunteer for the Ukraine war. So you'll be the new elite. And the media has reported with great gusto a few Ukraine war veterans being promoted to high positions and being decorated by Putin. There are only about 100 of those sort of people, where there are hundreds of thousands who served in Ukraine. So the armed forces is cunning and they are targeting people who are deeply in debt, debt collection agencies, sharing the men's private financial data, thinking the salary bureau attractive. Men who are awaiting trial are recruited, and they changed the law. You could only be recruited in the old days, you've been convicted. Now, if you're facing trial and you join the army, the charges will be dropped. Okay, because usually they're in pre-trial detention. The average age of a guy signing a recruit is now 45. He used to be 40. So they're not young and physically fit. Anyway, so this is the first sort of middle-aged war ever. There are 89 federal subjects in Russia, either autonomous regions or republics. But that includes the five that they seize from Ukraine. And each has got a recruitment quota. The one from Moscow is very, very low per capita. And St. Petersburg quite low as well. Remember, there are over 200 ethnic groups in Russia, indigenous ones. 80% of people claim to be ethnically Russian. Often that's not quite true. If you're partly ethnically Russian, partly something else, they often say Russian. So recruitment falls disproportionately on the minority groups. And the government is trying to reduce recruitment from Moscow and St. Petersburg because of the political consequences. Russia is a very, very centralized country. And so a protest in the capital city matters far, far more than somewhere in some remote region. So Moscovites are exceptionally well-educated, liberal-minded, westernized, and not so susceptible to government propaganda. Now, there is support for the war in Moscow, but it's just not as fulsome or as fervent as in remote areas. People are more dependent on the government financially, and people are less sophisticated, have less media literacy, more likely to fall for the state media lies. The Buryats are this indigenous ethnic minority from the Far East, and they are those who've been killed the most per capita in this war. So the president of Chechnya says his Republicans recruited the most men for the army, which is not quite true, but Kadyrov's exaggeration has some truth in it. And by the way, he's dying. Anyway, so employers are told you've got to find a certain number of men from your organization for the army. And so that's very difficult to fulfill. If you're seen as being no good at work, they'll try and force you to join the army. So if you, the police, their salaries are lagging behind inflation. They're often demoralized, but they don't join because they're told if you resign, you'll be immediately drafted into the army. So the guys are easy to recruit, have already been recruited. So it's becoming more and more of a headache to recruit sufficient men. Does this mean they won't be able to continue the war much longer? Because they're having to be a husband their force a bit more and not be so careless of the lives of their men, because there are not so many of them. So how many more men can Russia recruit? I mean, it's in the hundreds of thousands, but it's not in the millions anymore. So they don't want the huge scale demonstrations caused by a mass draft. But that's why they're becoming more circumspect about it. And that's why some people are saying it actually favors Ukraine a long war. I mean, I don't think it does. But unless Trump comes in and abandons Ukraine, I mean, I think the war is going to go all the way through 2025, possibly to 2026. So Russia is facing some longer-term demographic and economic problems. Putin thinks people will suffer more, but will he push them too far? But even if there was a major general mobilization, that could cause mass demonstrations and wild disorder, but that wouldn't automatically lead to the end of the war, probably would. Or it wouldn't automatically lead to the overthrow of the government. If Putin's forced to choose between ending the war, being overthrown, he'll obviously end the war. But the government is going to strive not to push the public too far. Remember, they've always said this is a special military operation, not a war. Therefore, life should continue as normal. Anyway, thank you for watching the channel. Make sure you subscribe to me on Patreon, donate on PayPal, georgecalan79@gmail.com. I was referring to Ramzan Kadyrov, okay? The president of Chechnya. Goodbye.